Ozuna, 15AP 1877. Council, are you ready to proceed? Please do.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Alicia McKay on behalf of Mr. Lazaro Ozuna. In 1975, the legislature enacted the expunction statute in recognition of a need to shield youthful offenders from some, but not all, of the harsh consequences of criminal convictions. Today, a probationer who's been deemed eligible at the time of sentencing must meet three requirements to successfully complete his or her sentence to achieve expunction. Those requirements being that there be no subsequent offense, that probation not be revoked, and that the probationer has satisfied the conditions of probation. Now, this court has recently looked at the expunction statute and greatly offered a lot of clarity to the process, but it has yet to determine the meaning of the satisfied the conditions of probation requirement, which is the primary issue in this case. Interpreting this requirement to mean sufficient or satisfactory compliance with the conditions of probation as determined by the probationary authority rather than perfect compliance is in accord with the statutory language, the legislative purpose, the legislature's 2009 expansion of the statute, and this interpretation avoids unconstitutional results. So, like I mentioned, there are, I think, one primary issue in this case, the meaning of the third requirement in the expunction statute, and a secondary issue of equal importance, which is who decides whether a probationer has satisfied the conditions of probation or met each of the three requirements. And our position on that second issue is that it's the plain language of the statute puts that decision-making authority with the probation authority.
Counsel, is that authority unreviewable?
I think that when a decision is made in favor of the probationer, it is not reviewable by the circuit court. Now, if there was a question of whether a probationer could, who had an adverse decision made by their probation agent, I do think that that is reviewable through the administrative review process.
Why the difference?
Well, so when we look at the plain language of the statute here, and I'm in subsection 1MB, when we're looking at how the authority has been divided, the subsection 1MB really talks about who makes the determination of whether to issue a discharge certificate and whether to forward that to the circuit court. And all of the activity in that subsection really generates in the probation office. Then in this court in Hemp, looking at that exact language, specifically stated that at the time that the discharge certificate reaches the court, there's no need for the court or no authority for the court to grant, to review that certificate. So I think that the...
Do we need to have a specific grant of statutory authority to review what the probation agent does?
I do think so. I don't think that there's inherent authority that would come into play in this circumstance.
Inherent authority, do you mean unreviewable authority?
I do mean it's unreviewable, and I again would turn to the plain language of the statute.
Can you identify in any other functions of the executive branch that are unreviewable?
Well, I think we have to remember here that the administrative decision was made in favor of Mr. Ozuna. And I can't think of other situations where an administrative body makes a decision in favor of someone which is automatically reviewed by the circuit court or another authority. So I think that that's in line with how administrative decisions are made. And then, of course, if an individual is unhappy with that decision, then there's typically a clear administrative review process that they can go through.
Take me through, if you are able to, the review process for revocation of probation.
So the decision whether to initiate revocation is with the probation authority. If that recommendation is made and the probationer wishes to contest or not waive their rights at that point in time, then there's a preliminary type hearing of
before
whether
whom?
Before a magistrate. And if there is essentially a type of probable cause determination made of a violation, and then the probationer wishes to move forward, then there would be a hearing before the administrative law judge that with the hearing and appeals.
Okay, so let's say there is a request by the agent to revoke probation.
Yes.
And it is, and I'm following up on Justice Kelly's question to see if there's some kind of an analogy here, and I'm not all that familiar with this process.
Sure.
So let's say that the agent says we're going to revoke probation. And then it goes before, you said, a magistrate.
That's
which
right.
is part of the administrative
yes.
procedure,
yes.
not a judge magistrate, administrative.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Okay. And that, let's say the defendant prevails there.
Right.
Is that reviewable?
I don't believe that the probation authority, at least in my understanding of the administrative code procedure, then could appeal that determination. I think then revocation does not move forward at that point.
It does not move forward. Then.
That's my understanding.
So that would be an example, it seems to me, if you're correct, that if it's in favor of the defendant, there's no further review, but if it's against the defendant, it goes to the administrative law judge, and then
sure.
to circuit court?
I believe so, yes. Yes. And I think that this is a process that the legislature contemplated when it put in the first subsection, the circuit court's authority to determine at the time of sentencing whether someone meets the age, eligibility, and offense type eligibility requirements, and then to exercise their discretion of whether to order expunction upon the completion of sentence. We see similar divisions of authority in other parts of the statute. So when we think about programming decisions that circuit courts make, for example, with the earned release program, the authority for the circuit court at the time of sentencing is to determine whether an individual meets the statutory requirements to be eligible for the programming. But once that decision is made, then the execution of the sentence really lies with the Department of Corrections. And the Department of Corrections in that circumstance decides then whether the person be enrolled in the earned release program and whether they complete the program. And ultimately, that decision leads to a lessened time of incarceration with the time put onto their extended supervision. So I don't think that this process is one that is uncommon or unique completely to the expunction process.
I want to know how many certificates the DOC has at its disposal so that it could send them to the circuit court. Now, Kemp says, quote, "We hold that a successful completion of probation automatically entitled him to expungement."
Sure.
In fact, this is a strange statute. It's automatic, and the court really has very little, if anything, to do with it, and neither does the defendant. Hemp says, he doesn't have to ask for a certificate. It
right.
has to just be done. And then Hemp says, finally, we hold the circuit court improperly exercised its discretion when it reversed its decision to allow expungement. And I gather that's your basis here. But so how many kinds of certificates? We have a certificate of, I assume, a compliance, right? They fulfilled all of the probation requirements, you are discharged, right?
Right. So my understanding is that in a felony case, that would be the certificate of discharge that the probation agent would generate and issue to the probationer. They receive one for the completion of their current supervision, and if they have no other supervisions, taking place at the same time, they receive another certificate, a final discharge certificate. In the case of misdemeanants, they do no longer receive certificates of discharge. The probation statute was changed around 1997, and so they're no longer issued. Instead, the probation agent issues something called a notice of case status change, which is just a very just a very simple document that says your supervision is complete.
You know,
okay, so what if they're not, they don't comply? What kind of certificate do they get?
Well, I guess one example would be that their
notice of revocation.
Their probation be revoked. Yeah.
Okay, but it's not revoked. They haven't. Has his probation been revoked?
No, and that's
okay.
No.
So it's not been revoked. So, but there's indication on this form that he's complied, but he hasn't complied. So what's the deal?
Okay, so I think that the form itself is slightly confusing. So the DOC has generated two different forms. There's the verification form that we see in this case, and then there's a second form called the failure to meet criteria for expungement.
Which that's not in this case.
That is not involved in this case.
Now tell me the name of that form again.
Sure. It's the failure to meet criteria for expungement.
Okay.
And the DOC case reference manual indicates that that failure form is the one that's to be used if someone has not met the criteria for
expungement. Was that a form in effect in this case, or is that a new
It is not a new form. They were both being issued at the time of this case.
Okay, so it's a failure, and that form was not sent in today.
That's correct. The agent chose the form that the manual instructs to use.
Well, what's the court supposed to do? Mm-hmm. It gets a form,
yep.
And I'm using your phrase, ambiguous,
mm-hmm.
because it says everything's swell. And then it also says, but he used alcohol, which was a condition of probation of never using alcohol, right? So what's a court supposed to do? You get a form and Hemp says it's automatic if you satisfy the condition and you can't revoke that form. You can't change your mind, court. In fact, this is a very strange statute. You know, it has nothing really to do with the court. It's all DOC stuff. So, what's the court supposed to do when it gets an ambiguous form?
Well, I think under the language of the statute and under Hemp, when the court received the form, which, indicates the satisfaction of the criteria, it was not to review, although I think the form invites some amount of review because it contains quite a bit of information. But under the language of the statute in Hemp, the court essentially was to exercise, a ministerial type duty and pass the form to the clerk so that the clerk could go through the expungement process. And I do think there are some problems with the form that the DOC has created. I'm not entirely convinced that it follows the language of the statute. I think it's got categories that don't exactly reflect the three requirements. It separates out the financial considerations and says, we'll be including a balance inquiry. And I don't think that the language of the statute contemplates that type of information being sent to the circuit court.
Are there some problems with the form, or are there some problems with Hemp? And what I mean by that, and I think my line of questioning is going to dovetail with that of Justice Abrahams. It seems to me what is being set up under the facts of this case is sort of an artificial or unnecessary conflict. In other words, whose idea of successful probation trumps? Is it the probation officer's idea of what successful completion of probation is, or is it the circuit court's? Having been a circuit court judge for 6 years, I often used the tool of expungement as a very effective and I think very appropriate means of addressing missteps and misbehaviors and criminal activity in the right circumstance. But when the judge sets out the conditions for expungement, the judge has very specific ideas of the behavior that the individual, in order to earn the privilege of expungement, is going to have. And so my point is, from their perspective roles in the system, in the administration of justice, can they both be right? I mean, the probation officer is going to be handling routinely dozens, if not hundreds, of cases. hundreds of clients. And, you know, a relapse here, a relapse there to them might mean, well, a slight delay in the release of probation or not perfect, but successful. Good enough.
Sure.
Whereas the circuit court, when it made its order, had as its criteria, when I said successful, I meant successful. And one of your conditions was no use. And I see on this form that you violated that condition. So from the circuit court judge's perspective, can the circuit court judge be correct as well? And so it seems to set up an unnecessary conflict between, well, is the circuit court judge bound by the determination of the probation officer? And that seems to me an odd conflict.
Sure. And, you know, I think under our interpretation of sufficient or satisfactory compliance as determined by the probationary authority, I think that, you know, if this court were to hold that, you know, exact position, I think that that would add great clarity to circuit court, so they would know when they are exercising their discretion at the time of sentencing that the decision making then goes, leaves their courtroom and is with the Department of Corrections. So I think that this court can give great clarity, and I think having a dual kind of review, or having an agent's decision automatically reviewed by the court, would complicate the process more than I think is contemplated in the plain language.
But you have review because, as Justice Ann Walsh Bradley pointed out, the probationer is frequently, almost always, entitled to administrative review if there's a conflict between the probationer and the probation officer,
right,
as to whether a violation occurred, and they can seek review from the circuit court through the administrative process. So what's so different about this?
Well, I think the difference is that when you have a positive decision made in favor at the probation agent, by the probation agent.
A positive decision in meaning what?
In favor of expunction, that the person has met the three requirements. So I think that the difference is that when that determination is made in favor of someone, that the statute doesn't contemplate further review of that determination.
Didn't
that make sense?
Did you have a question?
Thank you.
I'll follow.
So, counsel, if the circuit court judge were interested in conditioning expunction on no use, meaning no use, if the probation officer's decision is unreviewable, how is it that the circuit court is able to impose a condition that he can be confident is going to be respected by the probation officer?
Sure. And so I know I'm on shaky grounds here when I'm asking this court to say that perhaps the circuit court doesn't have authority to make obviously has authority to impose reasonable conditions of probation.
And it has authority to impose the conditions,
right,
that have to be satisfied for expunction.
It does. However, I don't think it can impose conditions on a case-by-case basis, or rather to make that this person who's conditionally eligible for expunction has different requirements or a higher level of requirements than someone else. I think what the statute tells us is that you have to have satisfied the conditions of probation. And our interpretation of that is that that is in a global sense, looking at all of the conditions that the court has imposed and the person's overall performance on probation.
Well, counsel, are you suggesting that the statute deals with the function of the record can be reverse engineered to put limits on a circuit court's discretion on what conditions have to be actually satisfied to be entitled to the function?
I don't think that's quite what I'm saying. I'm not really taking any position on the requirements that a court can impose, but I think that once the court exercises its authority at the time of sentencing under the first subsection of the expunction statute, then the authority on the execution of the sentence changes and goes to the probation authority.
But the effect of your argument, though, is that it does remove from the circuit court the ability to mandate that a particular condition be actually satisfied. Because you're saying the probation officer has unreviewable discretion to essentially waive it.
Right, and I think that's true with some conditions, like with a no drinking condition, you either did or you didn't drink. But some conditions are much more fluid than that type of condition, and so when we're looking at sufficient or satisfactory compliance, we're thinking of the whole basket of conditions that a person is required to meet. So I do think that, you know, our argument is not that probation should be easy, that that agents should be disregarding the court's ordered conditions. That's not what we're saying by any means. But I think when we think about the legislative purpose of expunction and the legislature's willingness to expand to more individuals convicted of more serious crimes, perfect compliance type interpretation, I think in practice, is going to make expunction almost unattainable for probationers. And so I think that's, you know, one piece that lends support for the sufficient or satisfactory interpretation of your
question. Justice Bradley, I think, was waiting to ask a question, so we let her go next.
Let's just take a look at the statutes that we're talking about, because I think when our Matasik case came out, and that's the case that tracked the statute in sub 2. Judges were, do you know what chomping at the bit means? Okay. Judges were chomping at the bit to see how they could get around it. I was at the seminar right after it came out. The statute, we said in that case, is clear, and we were looking at 973.015, sub 2. The court shall order at the time of sentencing. And so that's what you were talking about, I think, earlier. But where else in the statute? Point me to the words you are relying on for the arguments that you are advancing in 973.015, other than what I've indicated here that is the basis of our Matasik case. Courts used to do, like I used to do as a circuit court judge, and hold it in advance,
sure.
Check on it, see how the guy's doing. Usually it was a guy, and then decide. But Matasik came out and changed that landscape. What other language, point me to your statute that you're talking about?
Sure, in terms of the authority.
The process.
Yeah.
Upon successful completion of probation, what happens?
Right. So I guess I would turn to subsection 1MB, which first says a person, you know, has successfully completed probation, I'm sorry, their sentence, if, and in the case of a probationer, if they've met three certain requirements. And then the next sentence, which is the sentence this court specifically looked at in Kemp, the upon successful completion of the sentence, the detaining or probationary authority shall issue a certificate of discharge, which shall be forwarded to the court of record and which shall have the effect of expunging the record. That sentence, I think, indicates that all of the action is in the probation agent's office at that point in time at the completion of sentence. They make the determination to issue the certificate of discharge or another form in the case of misdemeanors, and then they make the decision to forward it to the circuit court.
Counsel, the probation agent in this case actually reported, didn't he, that Mr. Ozuna did not qualify for expunction?
I think I would disagree that's what the agent communicated. I do understand that the form has a lot of information on it, and it's not all in Mr. Ozuna's favor. But the form that the agent selected was the verification form. And I think that indicates that the agent's decision was that Mr. Ozuna did not perform perfectly, but I'm forwarding this form, the verification form, to the circuit court with the intent that expunction would take place.
So is your position that any time this form is used, that is the probation officer's representation that expunction is appropriate?
It's hard to say, you know, 100% of the time, but I do think that is what that form communicates.
Well, let's explore that a little bit, because if it's not 100% of the time, then the question is, how do we tell?
Right.
So let's take a look at the form, and it appears to me that there are two sections that address whether or not the person has satisfied the terms of the statute. The first has four boxes that could potentially be checked under successfully completed his or her probation. All court-ordered conditions have been met. All court-ordered financial obligations have been paid in full. The offender has not been convicted of the subsequent offense. Right? And then we move down to the next section.
Right.
And that says there are options to check. The offender has not successfully completed probation. Next section, all court-ordered conditions have not been met. Next one, all court-ordered financial obligations have not been paid. Next one, the offender has been convicted of subsequent offense. So let's say the probation officer says, yeah, I want this guy's record to be expunged, but he checks every single one of those boxes in the second section.
Right.
Are we supposed to conclude that simply because this form was sent, that he is entitled to expunction, even though the probation officer documented that there's no chance in the world he's entitled to expunction?
Under that situation, I would agree with you that the circuit court would be in a difficult position. And just to briefly finish answering your question, I think that the problem lies with the way this form is created. There's no need for the second section on this form because there are two different forms that the DOC uses. And instead of using a second section here, it should just rely on the failure to meet the criteria.
Thank you very much.
I have
time in rebuttal. Well, we save it for rebuttal.
No,
I want to go on. Just a minute, Justice Abrahamson. We are now, her time that she's allotted here has passed, but you will have time to ask your question first when she comes back for rebuttal. We're now going to go on to the state side of the argument.
Ask it
Thank
now
you.
And you can think about it. I want to know how you would write this decision in light of the form that was used and the double barrel.
May it please the court, my name is Scott Rosenau and I represent the state of Wisconsin. This case presents the court with two starkly different choices. It can issue a decision that will benefit Mr. Ozuna personally, or it can issue a decision that will benefit all young offenders who are conditionally granted expungement at their sentencing.
How about rendering a decision that tracks the words of the statute, regardless of who it benefits?
Well, I believe the state's position does follow the language of the statute.
Okay. And the state position is?
That the court should hold two important things in this case. First, it should hold that a circuit court must review a defendant's discharge paperwork to determine whether the defendant has met the legal statutory requirements for earning expungement. And that holding would do a few things. It would follow the language of the statute. It would avoid absurd results. It would help to ensure that a defendant who is actually entitled to expungement receives it with little or no effort on his part. And it would also help create a procedure by which a defendant could challenge a determination that he's not entitled to expungement. And under those circumstances, like in this case, he would have the assistance of appointed counsel if he were indigent. The second
Do you see a difference if the court, if the circuit court says, in order to be entitled to expungement, sir, you have to successfully complete the terms of probation? Okay, that's defendant A. And then defendant B comes up 5 minutes later, and the circuit court says, sir, in order to earn expungement, you have to successfully complete probation. Or let's take probation, successfully complete probation, including you may not possess or consume alcohol. So in case A, if the report comes back and lists a whole host of undesirable behaviors that the probationer engaged in, but at the bottom, the probation officer reports successfully completed probation. B comes back, same conclusion, successfully completed probation, but as is the case here, consumed or possessed alcohol. Is there a difference? Is there a difference in as far as what the circuit court judge needs to do or can do under those circumstances?
Just to clarify, in the case A hypothetical, does the undesirable conduct violate a condition of probation?
All sorts of violations, but not major enough in the view of the department to seek revocation.
Well, if the defendant in each case violates one or more conditions of probation, then the state's position is that he cannot receive expungement because he failed the third requirement of the statute. And the state's position, at least, is a defendant must satisfy the court-imposed conditions. This case does not raise the issue of whether a defendant can be denied expungement for violating a DOC-imposed condition of probation.
Is there a distinction to be made between DOC-imposed conditions of probation and circuit court conditions of probation?
I'm not sure if there is, and the state's not taking a position on that issue in this case because that's an issue that's not being raised in this case.
Well, that does raise the question. The public defender has said that...
I cannot hear your question. Would you move into the microphone?
Sure. Ms. McKay has said that one of the questions we have to answer is whether perfect performance is required before expungement is available. And if perfect performance is the requirement, then don't we have to look at Department of Corrections imposed conditions of probation, because presumably one of those would be have to meet with your probation officer. If you miss a meeting, you've not fulfilled your conditions of probation, right?
Well, I guess I've got a few things to say in response to that. One is that the discharge form only refers to court-imposed conditions. I'm not sure if this one does, but just for full disclosure, these two forms, the one that says failure to satisfy conditions and the other one that says verification of satisfaction of conditions, those two forms were actually both revised by DOC in May 2015, a month before the agent in this case filed the form. So not only did she file the outdated form, which is a lot less clear than the revised forms, but the state's position is that she filed the wrong form of the two forms. She should have filed the one saying he's not entitled to expungement because that's what she clearly meant to say.
Why didn't you tell us this? Someone tell us this, that these aren't the forms that are being used anymore. If one of the concerns is the second half of the form is inconsistent with the top half, I mean, we're just finding that out for the first time, or did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything, Your Honor. I contacted some DOC people before the holidays, and then went on vacation for about a week and a half, and a lot of people out of office. By the time they got back to me and I got in touch with the right person who could answer my questions, it was last week Friday, so I thought I would just bring it up today and file the two forms if the court wants them after oral argument.
But the issue would be bigger than that. The issue is who has the authority to make this determination?
Right. So I think that there are kind of two alternative issues. One is, what did the agent actually mean when she filed this form? And the state's position is that the agent pretty clearly meant, don't expunge this guy's conviction because he's not entitled to it. The alternative is, if the court thinks that the agent was ambiguous or that the agent actually meant to expunge the guy's conviction, then, of course, we would reach the issue, can the court trump the agent? And the answer to that question has to be yes, for any number of reasons. For example, an agent could easily make a factual mistake that might be apparent on the face of the discharge form. For example, the agent might say he was discharged from probation on March 10th, and on March 11th, he was cited for underage drinking, and the agent might just not realize that he was no longer on probation at that point. Or, for example, the agent might say the defendant performed 40 hours of community service, he's required to do 80. The judgment of conviction might say 80 hours, but at sentencing, the court might have actually said 40. Under those circumstances, the judge could say, well, I recall saying 40, the guy did 40, so I'm going to expunge it. And that's how it should work out. The agent shouldn't have to run through the DOC, try to track down the transcript, and do all this work administratively to try to get expungement. The court should be able to just look at the form and determine independently as to whether the defender satisfies the legal requirements for earning expungement.
Counsel,
what you are relaying to us are factual determinations that a court would make. In other words, did the court say 40 days or did the court say a larger number of days?
Is there any factual contest that a condition of this probation was to refrain from using alcohol and that he did use alcohol during the probation period?
No, Your Honor, there is no dispute that that is clearly one of the conditions. That was in the sentencing transcript and on the judgment.
And there's no contest about that?
There's no contest about
okay,
that.
Okay, thank you.
Is there a contest whether he drank alcohol?
That's what I just asked him. He
said only
no.
Answered the first half of your question.
There's no contest over either of those issues.
Okay.
The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, noted that Ozuna did not drink alcohol.
You started your argument saying you had 2 points to make.
Yes.
Your first point was that the court must review the discharge to see if it meets the criteria of the statute. Right? That was what I cut. Okay. Now give me your second point, and then I'm going to come back to your first point, okay?
Okay.
What's your second point?
The second holding is that a defendant fails the third statutory requirement for earning expungement if he violates one or more conditions of probation, or at least court-imposed conditions of probation.
And then, if so, no expungement, right?
No expungement.
And that's your response to Justice Gableman, who asked you, hey, if there was a violation but no revocation because of the violation, as far as you're concerned, no expungement anyway, right?
Right.
You don't have to revoke, but you can't expunge.
Right.
All right, let's go back to your first one. The court must review the discharge to see if it meets the criteria. What papers are given to the court when the discharge is given? What papers are given so that the court can review whether the discharge meets the criteria and who's present so that they can argue the point?
Well, nobody is present that I'm aware of.
That's right.
But as to the first part of the question, it depends on the case. So in every felony or misdemeanor case, the Department of Corrections sends a notice to the court saying the probation has expired. And that doesn't matter whether it's an expungement case. DOC, the people who send these forms don't keep track of whether it's an expungement eligible case. If it's a felony case, regardless of whether the court conditionally granted expungement, the DOC Central Records Unit sends a certificate of discharge. That's the actual title of the form, it's a certificate of discharge. I believe there's one later in the appendix in the blue brief.
Right.
And then the agent in a felony or misdemeanor case where conditional expungement was granted, the agent in that case files the verification form, which is filed in this case, or the failure to meet conditions form, the two forms that have been revised.
Okay, we got two slips of paper. Three. Go ahead.
Right. So it's entirely conceivable, and I've confirmed this with DOC people when I finally got in touch with them last week. They confirmed that it's entirely conceivable that in a felony probation case, the circuit court would receive certificate of discharge from the Central Records Unit and also the failure to meet conditions for expungement form from the agent.
All right.
And according to the plain language of the statute, the certificate of discharge seems to control and seems to mean expunge, even though
so that's the only thing the circuit court has, and there's nothing else to review. So here the circuit court has a certificate of discharge and has a form that says he's satisfied everything. So what's to review?
Well, in this case, there was no certificate of discharge because it's a misdemeanor case. So all
don't we have a certificate with two parts that say he's satisfied everything? I'm trying to find it here.
It's not a certificate of discharge.
Page 108, I believe, of the appendix.
Yeah, 108. Verification of satisfaction of probation conditions for expungement. That's what the circuit court has.
Right.
So what's to review? It says verification of satisfaction of probation. It says the offender has successfully completed his/her probation. And it's signed by an agent, whoever that is, on 6/5/2015.
Right.
So I've reviewed it. Hemp says, hey, if it's been verified by the DOC, it's automatic, Judge. And the statute says that, too.
The court has to determine two things when reviewing the form. The court has to first determine what the agent says and what the agent is thinking and has concluded. And then second.
Well, no. I'm not going to determine. I don't think you can ask a circuit court to determine what the agent is thinking. That's like saying it's not the words he uses, it's what's in his heart.
Well,
that's not the rules in this court. It's what's on the paper. Unless you want to have a hearing. You don't think he deserves a hearing, do you?
Not under these facts.
Under any facts?
If he had alleged that he didn't, in fact, violate a condition of probation by drinking, then he'd be entitled to an evidentiary hearing.
Well, why would he allege that? And when? Let's get back to it. Let's just say the circuit court has to determine what's written on the papers, not what the agent is thinking.
Right.
Right? Do you agree with that?
Yes. The second and more important consideration is the defendant entitled to expungement? Has he met the three statutory requirements for earning expungement? That's a legal conclusion. And I suppose, as you were saying, it's ultimately irrelevant what the agent thought. If the court says he's entitled to expungement, then it'll grant expungement. If he's not, then it doesn't.
The statute says if the DOC says he's entitled to expungement, he's entitled to expungement. That's what Hemp says.
No, I don't think the statute or Hemp says that. Hemp and the statute both say upon successful completion of probation, the certificate of discharge means the defendant automatically gets expungement.
But that's what this certificate says.
The certificate in page 108, I don't think that's what it says. So I want to break it down like Justice Kelly did because I view it the same way. So about halfway through the form, there's a really thick black stripe, four boxes. First one says the offender has successfully completed his probation. I'll refer to that as section A of the form. And there's another thick black line, four more boxes, which are all the converse of the first four. I'll refer to these four second boxes as section B of the form, and another black stripe. So even though this form has been revised, it's much cleaner now. So the revised version only has four of the boxes saying check all these things inside the expungement. But under the screwier old version of the form, there are four boxes saying check all of these if he gets expungement, check one or more of the second set of boxes if he doesn't get expungement. So when the agent checked the box that said he has successfully completed his probation, the agent did not mean that he has successfully completed his sentence, as that phrase is defined in the statute, meaning he gets expungement. The state's position is that the agent meant that he was successfully discharged from probation in the sense that he was not revoked. That's what that box has to mean, because those four boxes try to track the three statutory requirements for earning expungement. The two middle boxes deal with whether the defendant complies with the conditions of probation. That's the third statutory requirement. The fourth box is whether the defendant was convicted. That's the first statutory requirement. That leaves us with the first box in each of these two sections, and that is whether the defendant was revoked, which is the remaining statutory requirement.
Let's take a look at the statute. I'm not done. I'm sorry. Okay. So, is it your view here that this is an ambiguous verification of satisfaction of probation?
When I wrote my brief, the state's position originally was that the form at best is ambiguous because...
Was or was not?
Was ambiguous,
yes.
At best. Originally, I interpreted that first item in those two sections to mean that he has successfully completed his sentence, meaning expunged his conviction. Mm-hmm. But since I filed the brief, the state's position has shifted a little bit. Now the position is that the first box simply means, was he discharged from probation successfully in the sense that he wasn't revoked? That's all the agent was saying by checking that box, is he wasn't revoked.
He didn't say that, but that's what you think he thinks, and you think that's what it means. Okay. Now, if a court's faced with this kind of ambiguity, should they call in the agent and call in the defendant and have a hearing and find out what's going on here?
Only if the material facts are in dispute would...
Well, the material fact here is, and one of law, but you can't do it without the facts. Did he or didn't he satisfy probation in the opinion of the Department of Correction? Right?
Right.
Was there any hearing here on that?
There was no hearing.
No.
What fact would you decide at a hearing? It's not contested that he used alcohol. It was prohibited, and he used it during the period of probation. So what fact would we be deciding if we had a hearing?
That, exactly. The state's position is that no hearing was required because no material facts were in dispute. It's not disputed whether he drank alcohol. That's the fact. The legal, whether that alcohol consumption makes him ineligible for expungement is a legal issue.
It's a question of law, whether that drinking of alcohol then makes him fall inside or outside of the statute dealing with expunction.
Right.
Oh. And you like argument, counsel?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Court gets help when there are counsel who argue a legal position?
I'm not sure what the question is. I'm sorry.
Well, the question is quite simple. If the issue is, does some, a lot, a sniff, a taste of alcohol, and I don't know what it was here, you don't either, do you?
0.102.
Yes, so, he was intoxicated, okay. So we
all
can
right.
know.
So he, when he does that, and they don't revoke him, is that within the Department of Corrections' view, satisfactory completion? Don't you want argument on that? Don't you think counsel should have the right to argue that?
He has had a right to argue that. He argued it before the Court of Appeals, and he's arguing it before this court now. He could have argued it before the circuit court.
In the next case, right. How could he argue before the circuit court? That's my point.
He should have done what Wisconsin Statute Section 80930 says, which is before having a direct appeal in a criminal case, file a post-conviction motion in the circuit court. Had he done that, and had he alleged in his motion that he didn't consume alcohol, the circuit court most certainly would have been required to hold an evidentiary hearing because material facts would have been in dispute. That's why he didn't get a hearing.
Okay.
That's why he didn't argue before the circuit court.
Well, you know, we have to write an opinion on this. So is that what we should say, that if there's going to be a denial of expungement in the circuit court, then and there is a denial, that the procedure for a hearing before the trial court is through this process?
Yes, that's the state's position, Your Honor. And I believe that position is much more tenable than the one that Ozuna is proposing, which is seek administrative relief through the Department of Corrections.
You think it's required by due process?
Is circuit court review required by due process? I don't think so.
Notice
I think,
and hearing?
I think some kind of administrative review in the Department of Corrections would probably satisfy due process, but at least on public policy grounds and for a number of reasons, I think the state's position is that the direct review, post-conviction motion, direct appeal process is much preferable over going through the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
But
one
here
why,
he wouldn't have received his adverse ruling until the court denied the expungement, and so the post-conviction motion would have been the appropriate venue. It's not an administrative action, right?
Right.
Counsel, I want to return to the statute. That is 973.015. I dislike this statute. I think this statute sets out, in its plain words, a less than satisfactory procedure. I don't think that the court should have to order expunction at the time of sentencing. But that's what the statute clearly says, and that's what we said the statute says. I think that doesn't work really well, but that's what the legislature told us to do. You're telling us now that the first point you made in argument is that the circuit court must review the decision of whether successfully completed. Where do you find that in the statute? What's your statutory authority for the legislature having adopted that process? Point me to the words.
The state's position is that the statute is silent on the issue of who decides. It doesn't clearly say the probation agent gets to decide either. But a fair reading of the statute implies that the probation agent makes the initial determination.
Okay.
And the court reviews it.
Show me where you're getting this fair reading, you see, because for me it's plain meaning. And so you're saying it's a fair reading. So educate me. What words are you pointing to from which you say it's a fair meaning that there is anticipated by the legislature
a review by the circuit court of the decision of whether or not there has been satisfactory completion of probation. What words do you look at?
I'm looking at subsection 1M, paragraph B.
973.015, 1MB, that's what I was looking at also. Now, what words?
This would be the second sentence of that paragraph where it says, upon successful completion of the sentence, the detaining or probationary authority, so that means the probation agent must make the initial determination, shall issue a certificate of discharge, which shall be forwarded to the court of record, so that means the court gets these documents, and which shall have the effect of expunging the record.
And see, I point out, I mean, I circle and I underline this stuff, I circle and make all sorts of different colors, which shall have the effect of expunging the record. What does shall mean there and how do you get around it?
It means must. It means that there's no discretion. If the defendant has satisfied, so Matusek and Hemp both stand for the proposition that once a defendant has met the three statutory requirements for earning expungement, the court has no discretion anymore at that point to deny expungement. And that's Hemp. Matusek is kind of the flip side, no discretion to grant expungement at that point.
What did the agent decide here? Was there satisfactory completion or wasn't there satisfactory completion?
The state's position is that the agent has decided that Mr. Ozuna has not met the statutory requirements.
Isn't that really a question of fact here? And I think I have all sorts of words going through my mind and I want to be judicious. Unfortunate question of fact. Unfortunate because we have a mixed up form. And so it's hard to know. And not only do we have a mixed up form, now we have a form that's no longer used. How can we divine what the agent really intended here?
I think ultimately what the agent really intended is irrelevant, or at least the court could conclude that.
Well, go back to the statute. Isn't
it? Let him finish.
No, I'm asking the questions. When you ask, then you can do what you want.
I thought your question was well put, Justice Bradley, but I would like to defer his answer.
Well, I am clarifying my question. But, you know, in deference to the Chief Justice, answer the question.
Well, I guess I'll answer in two parts. First would be with the form itself on page 108 of the blue brief appendix.
Now, you're telling me how you know how he divined, or how you're divining what he really meant.
The agent checked two of the boxes indicating that the defendant did not satisfy the conditions of probation. And the agent did not simply say Mr. Ozuna drank alcohol. The agent said failed to comply with the no alcohol condition. So the agent clearly is recognizing that that was a condition and that Mr. Ozuna did not satisfy.
What changed your briefing from it being ambiguous, you can't tell what he meant, to now being able to divine what he meant?
Originally, I thought that when the agent checked the box saying that Mr. Ozuna has successfully completed his probation, I initially interpreted that to mean the agent is saying he successfully completed his sentence, which is the magic phrase in the statute, meaning he gets expungement. But after talking with more people at work and at DOC, I came to the conclusion that that box simply corresponds to the statutory requirement that his probation was not revoked.
You know, we get into this difficulty because, of course, under our case law, probation is not a sentence, right? Is that implicated at all in response to what you're saying, successfully completed probation, although probation is not a sentence?
Perhaps, I suppose, because the statute doesn't say if you successfully complete probation. It says if you successfully complete your sentence, you're entitled to expungement. The form here says he successfully completed probation. And again, all that means is he discharged successfully in the sense that his probation had not been revoked. The second part to answer your question, Justice Bradley, is I think the key language in that sentence that I quoted from the statute is the first six words, upon successful completion of the sentence. So if there's no successful completion of the sentence, the certificate of discharge does not automatically result in expungement. So somebody has to decide whether there's successful completion.
So this, in your interpretation, you really give no meaning to verification of satisfaction of probation, the first or top part of the form, but instead give weight to the second part of the form. Is that right?
I believe so. Ozuna's position is that the court should look at the title of the form. The state's position is the court should look at the entire form. And there are a number of reasons why. Imagine where the shoe's on the other foot. And the agent says, files the other form and says, deny him expungement, he drank communion wine. And the court said, no alcohol. The court could say, well, I'm going to interpret what the condition meant that I imposed. And case law says, interpret probation conditions reasonably and with common sense. The circuit court judge could say, when I said don't drink alcohol, I didn't mean refrain from drinking communion wine at church. So the court in that case very well should say, no, I'm going to grant expungement, even though because the agent had an unduly restrictive and overly literal interpretation of the statute. There's another concern with the first requirement in the statute as well. Don't get convicted of a subsequent offense. That is a much more complicated issue than it might seem. Is a first offense drunk driving a subsequent conviction? What about a juvenile adjudication or refusal or a disciplinary sanction in prison? My point is courts should be deciding those issues. That shouldn't be left up to the agent or the detaining authority.
Counsel, do you have any idea what the judicial impact of your argument is? Your argument being perfect compliance and judicial review. Any sense of what that might be?
Well, my position, I believe, the state's position, rather, would prevent the court from basically sending a signal to defendants that they can violate conditions of probation and still get exposure.
You don't understand my question, but I'm sorry. I use the phrase judicial impact to mean how many more hearings are you going to have? So what's the judicial impact of your position, if you have any idea, of requiring perfect compliance? And is your position perfect compliance, or it wasn't clear to me, of both DOC rules of probation and court imposed? Is both?
Well, I wouldn't call the state's position perfect compliance. I would call the state's position, if the defendant violates one or more conditions of probation, he fails the third prong. One reason why, one of the reasons why, is that the second requirement is if you get revoked, you don't get expungement. And you can get revoked for drinking alcohol while on probation.
Use the words of the question and issue as stated by your opposing counsel, but maybe you don't agree with that wording. Perfect was in the wording. But give me the answer to the judicial impact. What's your sense of how many hearings this is going to increase if there is, however you use the phrase, more than substantial compliance, that there's court review? How many more hearings are you going to have?
I see that my red light's on. May I answer the question?
Yes, you may.
The state's position would be much more efficient and much more streamlined. If the agent says, don't expunge, and the court says, well, you're wrong, agent, I'm going to expunge, then there's no hearing, there's nothing. The defendant gets what he wants. If the court, regardless of what the agent thinks, if the court decides not to expunge, then the defendant can file a post-conviction motion, have assistance of counsel. The streamlined post-conviction procedures that are well-established would be in play. Ozuna's position would require the defendant to go administratively through DOC, then if he's unsuccessful there, seek relief in court. Would that be under the Administrative Procedure Act, some other statute, certiorari action? Who knows? It's all unresolved. Would he have the right to counsel in DOC, in the court? I don't know. It's a whole can of worms. So I believe the state's position is actually much more efficient for contesting expungement-related issues.
Thank you.
Is it your position that he's entitled to a lawyer on this post-conviction motion? Because the amicus brief by Legal Action of Wisconsin says once he's completed his sentence, he's not eligible for a state-funded attorney.
The amicus brief is referring to people years after they've completed their sentence when their time for filing a post-conviction motion is no longer, when the time has expired. In this case, Mr. Ozuna does have public defender appointed counsel because this is part of the direct appeal criminal process.
I know, but is it your position that on a post-conviction motion after he served his sentence, and the post-conviction motion relates to expungement that he's entitled as a matter of, from what I heard you say, matter of fair process, that he gets a lawyer. I mean, that's what saves it from you, as I heard you.
If he files a post-conviction motion or an appeal within the time limits under 80930, which is part of the 97402 process, then yes. If he blows the deadline for doing that and has to seek a collateral attack of some kind, then it's no longer criminal, it's civil at that point, and there isn't a right to counsel. So he did do it the right way. That's why
I'm
he has
going to ask
public
the same defense. Question to the state public defender. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
I
you
ask
you
the
very
decision
much.
Of Porter Fields to be affirmed. Thank you.
When I asked that we move to the state's argument, Justice Abrahamson had asked you a question. I said we would take it up first. So would you
sure.
please do that for us?
Of course.
Thank you.
So if I remember correctly, Justice Abrahamson asked from our position how we would write the opinion. So obviously we would ask the court to hold that the satisfied the conditions of probation means sufficient or satisfactory compliance, looking in a global sense of what the probationer is expected to do on probation. Then I think the secondary issue would come from the plain language of subsection 1MB, and it's the same sentence that we've both read to you, but our interpretation based on the language of that, we would ask the court to hold that it's the probation agent's determination of successful completion of sentence, and that would include each of the three requirements.
Counsel, if we agree with you on the second point, do you need us to agree with you on the first point?
That's an interesting question. So, you know, I think not necessarily. It's a difficult problem here, I think, because if the circuit court is not allowed to review the form, but the interpretation of the statute is perfect compliance, or however you want to put it, then there is, I think, an issue here of whether the agent filed the correct form. So it creates a problem, and I don't know that I have the solution for you on that.
Ms. McKay, one question that comes to mind with your proposed opinion mm-hmm. drafting in this is if we look at the language of the statute that we've been discussing, 1MB, we see a person has successfully completed the sentence if the person has not been convicted of a subsequent offense, and if on probation, the probation has not been revoked, so far so good, right? And the probationer has satisfied the conditions of probation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On May 27, 2014, Judge Carlson grants to your client the privilege of probationary supervision with the following, including the following conditions, not to possess or consume alcohol. Fast forward a few months later, December 2014, failed to comply with the no alcohol condition. Lake Geneva Police Department went to Harbor Shores Hotel for noise complaint. Your client cited for underage drinking. Perrin, what I assume is a .102. Anything else would be not dead but preserved. PBT. Perrin. And marijuana odor in the halls. But it's the PBT that we're looking at. How is your interpretation not rendering the phrase the probationer has satisfied the conditions of probation superfluous?
Sure. So under our interpretation of the sufficient or satisfactory compliance, when we think about it in terms of perhaps course requirements, which the court is probably quite familiar with, if a probationer potentially, hypothetically, is not revoked, maybe they've done a C level on
maybe
probation.
Maybe they've what?
Like a level C, like 70%, okay? They've done all right on probation, they're not revoked.
Sure.
Under the sufficient or satisfactory compliance, how I view that is you've done a level above that. So it has to be more than the probationer who just gets by.
What happens if you have the most easiest going probation officer in the world? Who
yeah.
Just, you know.
You get lucky.
right up until you wind up in front of the judge who expects his or her orders to be followed,
sure.
Including Judge Carlson, who expected that on May the 27th of 2014, when he ordered your client not to possess or consume alcohol, Judge Carlson expected that his order would be followed.
Right.
And so why, I ask myself, is Judge Carlson held hostage, in effect, to the determination of what could be, and I have no idea who the probation officer here is, let's say it's not one violation, let's say it's half a dozen, any number, but still, successful completion of probation. You know, these things happen.
Sure.
Why is Judge Carlson then left with this plate of, hey, Judge,
right. Nice
order, but guess what? The probation officer has determined successful completion, so you're stuck.
Right. So, again, I'd have to, I guess, point out what I see as a distinction between the imposition of sentence, where the circuit court has authority under the first part of the subsection, and the process that the legislature chose to then place the discretionary determination in the agent's hands. And I, agents don't act completely on their own. There's the whole system of supervision, and you know that. So I think the chances are of a lenient probation agent are possible, but there's a whole structure in place to have uniformity.
Thank you. I appreciate your perspective.
You know, you haven't answered my question. Not your fault. You interrupted by two other questions, and you answered those, which you had to do. So if you would complete the answer, that would be fine, and tell me if he's entitled to an attorney on any, he denies it, or on a post-conviction.
Right. So I think to just come in where I left off, the position we've advanced is that the verification form here, the choice of that form, is what communicated to the circuit court to exercise its ministerial duty to effectuate expunction. I'm not as convinced as the state that 809.30 would apply in this case. We have the plain language of the statute and this court's recent pronouncement in Hemp telling us that courts are not to be reviewing discharge certificates. So whether or not what the circuit court wrote on the form should be construed then as a final order under 809.30, I think raises a lot of questions, and questions that were not fully briefed by either party. So I'm not so sure that 809.30 applies. In addition, at the completion of sentence, to be clear, a person does not have an attorney, and they're not given any notice of filing anything under 809.30 like they would have been at the time of sentencing. So a young offender who's presumably not experienced in the system would be required to use 809.30, which I think is questionable if it would apply.
All right. Now, my question for you in terms of the way this is set up, if you have an unambiguous verification that he completes it, I think Hemp covers, we don't have any problem. If you have an ambiguous verification, and the question is this one ambiguous enough in light of the fact that on one half it says everything is A-OK and the other half says alcohol. Where it's ambiguous, then if you're going to say that the circuit court, unlike in him, now the circuit court has discretion, I don't see how you can have the circuit court exercise that discretion without a hearing.
I would agree with that. I think the determination here is whether the agent filed the right form. That would be the factual, I think, question at this point in time.
Factual meaning here whether or not it met the facts of whether the department reviews one or two or whatever number of alcohol violations, whether that's satisfactory or not. I mean, the whole tenor now in probation and parole is every violation should not revoke, every violation should not cause great problems, and it's all part of also our problem-solving course that relapse, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever the problem is expected. It's part of the process, and that the relapses are not necessarily failure to comply, It depends on how often and how close to the events that are here. So I have a lot of trouble with this. If there's going to be a one, to what extent there's discretion in denial.
Sure.
And two, what kind of hearing you have to give if you're going to deny. Because it's a big effect on the person's life, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I do think, just to briefly address your comment, that our interpretation of the meaning of satisfy the conditions of probation is in line with what the legislature, you know, their purpose, and also how we treat probation. I think that the goals are still consistent with expunction and probation.
Thank you very much, Counsel. Thank you both for fine arguments. It's a very, very interesting case, and your briefs were very helpful, and your arguments were also very, very helpful. We're going to